All right, welcome back, dear brother. So, wow, we had a, I think it was it. I was not anticipating what I was going to say in the book of Acts, but I thank Elohim that I believe he guided me to say those things that I said. I'm praying he guides me in the book of Revelations. Revelations, I'm totally surrendered to Elohim. I mean, especially I really need his guidance because I've read, different sources about the book of Revelations, particularly the trumpets. I've been scouring information to see what's true, and then again, none of the things I'm seeing by certain groups really can be trusted 100%. And in when it comes to teaching the scriptures, there's no margin for error. In the scriptures, it's better for us to teach one word that's true than to teach a whole bunch of ideas that's questionable and false. And that's not something I'm going to do. You understand? I am not going to say anything beyond what I actually know to be true. The only records that I trust, because there's nothing other about explanation, are what Tertullian, what Irenaeus, and the others say. Others that came in the 3rd century, I don't give much credence to it. Anything that came after that, like I've said, and I could show you reasons why for that, but their teachings are mixed, have different ideas that are different from what the apostles intended, different from what the what's called the apostolic fathers. Those again are the apostolic fathers are people like Irenaeus, Polycarp, Papias, possibly Ephraim. I can't find anything on Ephraim yet, but these were people from an older. These were the older elders, and I cannot stress enough that when Elohim teaches truth, he teaches it first. He tells us the truth first. Lies come afterwards. Lies come afterwards. So if you see that Papias, the records of Papias, the record of Polycarp or Irenaeus, Tertullian, up to Tertullian, I'll say there safely. You see another teacher comes and says something different, have faith. What the older people said, that's the truth, not what the new ones say. And when I read the newer stuff, I could see where they go wrong. And a lot of people don't pay attention to that. And so they teach things that are different. They teach things out of context. For instance, there are, when it comes to the book of Revelations, there are what's called a preterist. That's a way of interpreting the book of Revelations. And often the preterists are pretty good. Where they come into problems is where they try to fit everything within the destruction of Jerusalem and Rome. I think it goes beyond that. But the preterists basically believe all of the book of Revelation is complete. We're just waiting for Messiah to return. I don't necessarily subscribe to that. And of course, we have what's called the historicists. When I first heard the term historicists, I was excited because I thought they were really going to go by history. And in a way they do. But the problem with the historicists is that they come up with an idea and then they try to fit something in history to match their interpretation of what the scripture is saying, which is error. And a lot of what the historicists say are true. And that's where it becomes tricky. And then there's the futurists. A lot of the people today that speak about the book of Revelations, common you hear in the, are futurists. They actually believe everything in the you're reading in the book of Revelation is some future event, our future. They believe the great tribulation is something we're going to look to, is going to happen to us, And that's error. The futurists run into a lot of issues. Sometimes they understand it right, but they're understanding something that happened already, but they think it's something that's going to happen in the future. And that's where often they go wrong, that these things already happen. So I found that I cannot rely on the preterists. I cannot rely on the historicists. I cannot rely on the futurists. I have to rely on what the apostolic fathers said, and the early first, second century bishops said, and which is very hard to find, as I've said, information on them. So, but we will continue. I'll do my best, but I'm not going to say beyond what I honestly know, because I don't want to lie to anybody. It doesn't matter if what I said is accidentally truthful. I have to say what I know to be true. So let's continue with the book of Revelations. We stopped at chapter 9, verses 1. Okay, so let me turn there. And so in chapter 8, verse 13, it says, "And I beheld and heard an angel flying through the midst of heaven, saying with a loud voice, Woe, woe, woe to the inhabitants of the earth by reason of the other voices of the trumpet of the three angels which are yet to sound." Okay, so there are a total of seven trumpets, and four have already sounded. We saw the first trumpet was affecting vegetation, all the green grass, a third of it was destroyed. The second trumpet was a great fiery mountain fell into the sea and became blood, and a third part of marine, that is sea life, died. And a third part of ships, vessels, sea vessels were destroyed. And the third trumpet in verse 10, a great star from heaven named Wormwood fell on the drinkable water, fell on the fountains of waters and rivers. And a third of the parts of the waters became wormwood. And many died, and many people died in the water. So that's the first account of death through these trumpets. So then we saw verse 12, "And the fourth angel sounded, and a part of the sun, the stars, and the moon became dark." So a third of light from the main luminaries, sun, moon, and stars, a third part became dark, were darkened. So that's what the first four trumpets did, and then in verse 13 where we stop, he saw a flying angel. In my literal translation, he says, "I heard an eagle crying with a loud voice." That's the more literal translation rather than an angel. In the King James, it's translated as an angel. In my ESV, it says, "And I heard a flying eagle," right, "with a loud voice saying, Woe, woe, woe to the inhabitants of the earth by reason of the other voices of the trumpet and the three angels which are yet to sound." So let's continue with, let's see the remainder of these trumpet blasts, the other three. So in verse 9, I'll read up to verse 12 and continue as much as I can. "And the fifth angel sounded, and I saw a star fall from heaven unto the earth. And to him was given the key of the bottomless pit. And he opened the bottomless pit, and there arose a smoke out of the pit as the smoke of a great furnace, and the sun and the air were darkened by reason of the smoke of the pit. And there came out of the smoke locusts upon the earth, and upon them was given power as the scorpions of the earth have power. And it was commanded them that they should not hurt the grass of the earth, neither any green thing, neither any tree, but only those men which have not the seal of Elohim in their foreheads. And to them it was given that they should not kill them, but that they should be tormented 5 months. And their torment was as the torment of a scorpion when he strikes a man. And in those days shall men seek death, and shall not find it, and shall desire to die, and death shall flee from them. And the shapes of the locusts were like unto horses prepared unto battle. And on their heads were as it were crowns like gold. And their faces were as the faces of men, and they had hair as the hair of women, and their teeth were as the teeth of lions, and they had breastplates as it were the breastplates of iron, and the sound of their wings was as the sound of chariots and many horses running to battle, And they had their, and they had tails like unto scorpions, and there were stings in their tails, and their power was to hurt men 5 months. And they had a king over them, which is the angel of the bottomless pit, whose name in the Hebrew tongue is Abaddon, and in the Greek tongue, which is hath his name Apollyon. Verse 12, one woe is past, and behold, there came two woes more hereafter. Before I forget, I might forget to say this about Abaddon and Apollyon, which is the name of one angel. So Abaddon, in both languages, it means, the apostle means destruction. I used to think he meant father of judgment, because Abaddon, Abaddin, but I was wrong. When I read it, that's what I thought it meant, but it all the translations I read, both of the Hebrew Abaddon and the Apollyon, means to destruction or destroyer. So that's the meaning of the king of the bottomless pit. And they had a king over them, which is the angel of the bottomless pit. All right, so this is the Abaddon and the Apollyon. And notice that both Hebrew and Greek are being used. There's no complaining by in any way that it's wrong to use Greek. It's not. It's perfectly fine. It's a language. All languages were created by Elohim. And it means, and both either language means the same thing. So we're not more righteous in saying Abaddon than saying Apollyon. You know, some people think that when you say the thing in Hebrew, somehow it makes it more righteous. That's not sound. It's not. It's either way. Evil is evil in Hebrew. Evil in evil. Evil is evil in Greek. Good is good in Hebrew. Good is good in Greek. Okay? That's how that works. So let's go back to verse 9. So when the fifth angel sounded, and he saw a star fall from heaven to him, which was given, and to him was given the bottomless pit. So he saw the star fall from heaven. Now, some people think that this star is a demonic star or an angel, because often kokavim, are referred to as also malachim or angels, especially in the books of Enoch. You see that. And in the common regular scriptures that we have, you see that, the associations of stars and angels. So he was given a key. So that means he was given a key by whom? By Elohim, of course. He was given that key. We know that Messiah, when he rose, when he says he has the keys of hell and of Sheol, those things are in Messiah's authority. So if this star or angel received it, it is by the will of Messiah, who judges all things, who makes decisions. He's the one who makes the decisions in the creation. The Spirit, the Father dwells in him, and he carries out the will of the Father in dealing with the angels. So this angel was given the key to the bottomless pit, Tartarus or Tartaru, the bottomless pit. Those of us that are familiar with Enoch, we have a good understanding of this. In verse 2, and he opened the bottomless pit, and there arose a smoke out of the pit. So he opened the bottomless pit. In the account of Enoch, when the angels sin, as a result of their sins with men and women, I'm sorry, with human beings, with women actually, and against men, they sin against all, even against with the animals. Their punishment is that as they became fleshy beings, they were bound and kept in their fleshy, they were not allowed to change themselves back into angels. Rather, they were bound in different places, buried under the earth for as a punishment in their fleshy selves. So they're until this day, they're bound. So here, and a matter of fact, that's connected with the Day of Atonement as well, where you speak about in Leviticus chapter 16, where it speaks about you shall take the La Azazel, or the lamb for Azazel. Azazel is a name of one of the angels that sinned against mankind. And Azazel was one of the angels buried, bound in one of these pits. Okay, he was bound. And so when you read in Leviticus chapter 16 that you'll take the La Azazel, you're basically, they were to send that lamb to which represented Azazel into the wilderness. Why? Because Azazel was buried in the wilderness. If you're not familiar with the account of Enoch on that in Enoch 1, I would encourage you to read it. It'll give you insights as to why the ceremony of the Day of Atonement is carried out the way, why there are two lambs. One lamb represents Elohim. It really, Elohim's son is for Elohim. La Yud-Heh-Vav-Heh, La Yud-Heh-Vav-Heh. And the other one is called La Azazel. Because all the evils, most of the evils that were done by the angels, a lot of them, worst of the effects were through Azazel. So all the sins were placed upon that Azazel, who was buried somewhere in the wilderness. So let's continue. So here, the angel is given the key to the bottomless pit, and he opened the bottomless pit. And there arose a smoke out of the pit as the smoke of a great furnace. When we read all this, and the sun and the air were darkened by reason of the smoke of the pit. And there came out of the smoke locusts upon the earth, and upon them was given power. Now, as I've mentioned different types of beliefs, systems, religious belief system, like there are preterists who believe most, if not all, the book of Revelation was fulfilled in the destruction of Jerusalem and in Rome also, when Rome was destroyed. Then we have the historicists that believe these things were fulfilled, but much later, through seven barbarian hordes which destroyed the Holy Roman Empire. That's what the historicists believe. And we have, again, futurists, which is most of what you hear today, where they believe this is something yet to happen. They believe they're actually going to be real locust and demonic-type creatures attacking the earth. And that often these people are also rapturist, where they believe somehow the church or the congregation will be raptured before all of these things begin to happen. I don't subscribe to these things. I cannot. And I'm not saying they're wrong, but I cannot, because I've read them and I see error. And whenever I see error, I cannot subscribe to these things. But what I can say is that here, I would lean towards that these are the events happening in Jerusalem and in the nations. The preterists believe these are all the things that were happening in the as recorded by Josephus in the Jewish wars, where they were fighting among themselves, unfortunately, and against the Romans. They believe all these trumpets pertain to this. And I'm not going to go into the details they give. A lot of it is reasonable, is reasonable, and it seems reasonable. But the historicists claim that, again, I said, these things are much later. It's when the barbarian hordes attacked the Holy Roman Empire. But I'm going just to try to go through what it says here without subscribing to anything. So we see that there are locusts coming. These are creatures, and often animals do depict armies, the military forces of people. There's no interpretation given to this in the scripture, so I'm not going to give an interpretation to say what these are, because it's simply not here in the text. I'm not going to go beyond what's written in the text here. If I have the record of what Polycarp or one of those early elders say, I would teach that, but I still don't have those yet. So we see that it says that the fifth trumpet locust comes, and power was given, and it was commanded them that they should not hurt the grass of the earth, neither any green thing, but only those men which had not the seal of Elohim in their foreheads. And remember what we read about the 144,000? When we read, it says in verse 2 of chapter 7, and I saw another angel ascending from the east, having the seal of the living Elohim, and he cried with a loud voice to the four angels to whom it was given to hurt the earth and the sea. Four angels given to hurt the earth and the sea, saying, hurt not the earth, neither the sea, nor the trees, till we have sealed the servants of our of our Elohim in their foreheads. And we know 140,000 were sealed from among the Israelites, and a great countless multitude from all nations were also sealed. So now that, so it shows you, now this is how you can tell what's going on here. Because here they're sealed. And now this event is happening when? When is this smoke? After they were all sealed. You see that? So how do we understand this then? When were these people sealed? So we have to ask, when were they sealed? Because now we see in chapter 9, they're actually going to hurt. To hurt. Because verse 4 of chapter 9 says, and it was commanded them that they should not hurt the grass of the earth, neither any green thing, neither any tree, but only those men which have not the seal of Elohim in their foreheads. Which occurred, which was accounted for in chapter 7. Among the 144 among the Israelites, servants, and a countless multitude among the Gentiles. So it's showing you that this 144,000 and this great multitude are those who were coming through the great tribulation that had in our time already happened. So this gives us an insight of, okay, when did this begin to happen? It did not begin until all were sealed. That's biblical fact here. Right? We were told in chapter 7 that the 144,000 needed to be sealed, and we were told that the great multitude of Gentiles needed to be sealed. Verse 4 tells us that these angels, the fifth angel, cannot start doing anything. And there came out of the smoke locusts upon the earth, and to them was given power, the power of scorpions, and it was commanded them. So these locusts were commanded, hey, you can't do anything until after everyone is sealed. So we need to think. We need to look through actual history to understand what's going on here. Because we have the biblical rule here. The biblical rule tells us that these events here in chapter 9 cannot happen until the 144,000 are sealed or were sealed and the great multitude were sealed. Who were they? They came out of great tribulation. Chapter 7 tells us. The great multitude who came out of great tribulation. Verse 14 of chapter 7. So when did these things begin to happen? Sometime during the great tribulation or after the servants of Elohim who lived in that time were sealed. And it was commanded them, verse 4, that they should not hurt the grass of the earth, neither any green thing, any tree, but only those men which have not the seal of Elohim in their foreheads. Verse 5, and to them it was given that they should not kill them, but that they should be tormented 5 months. And their torment was as the torment of scorpion when he strikes a man. And I know the preterists believe this reflects what was going on in, again, the Jewish wars as recorded by Josephus during the time that Jerusalem was being sieged. People like were starving and they were eating, some of them even ate each other's flesh, you know. They were killing each other in there. Some believe that this is talking about. So to them it was given that they should not kill them, but that they should be tormented 5 months. And their torment was as the torment of a scorpion when he striketh a man. And in those days shall men seek death and shall not find it, and shall desire to die, and death shall flee from them. And the shapes of the locusts, we see their descriptions. Locusts were like unto horses, prepared unto battle. So that's telling you they're not really locusts, right? Just as we know, looking at Joseph and Daniel, the prophecies, how they describe beast to talk about people, to talk about armies, to talk about nations. So it's very likely, and I'm not going to say 100%, but very likely, it's reasonable to understand that these locusts are referring to some military force. And they had hair, verse 8, and they had hair as the hair of women, and their teeth were as the teeth of lions. And they had breastplates, as it were, breastplates of iron. And the sound of their wings was as the sound of chariots of many horses running to battle. So the facts are intertwined with allegory, so that only those who are seeking to understand and will search the scriptures and pray will understand. Iron was known to be among the Romans. You know, iron, they had these iron swords with just the right length, the right thickness, and they could literally break the swords of bronze, of brass that the others had. those swords, they were able to just really destroy their enemies. They use iron, okay? So, and they had a king over them, which is the angel of the bottomless pit, whose name, as I said, in Hebrew is Abaddon, and in the Greek, Apollyon, which just means destroyer or destruction. So this is just the fifth trumpet. I'm going to stop here. But again, just before I end, just consider that this event began to happen when they were sealed, when his servants were sealed. We know that Messiah said that when you see Jerusalem surrounded, flee to the mountains, speaking to those who would believe him, to flee. And we know that all the true believers fled Jerusalem and were able to escape the destruction before the destruction of Jerusalem. So it is very likely that this is what this is talking about. And I would like to find out about the 5 months and see how that correlates with the events that actually happened in Jerusalem. How long did the siege of Jerusalem take? I'll try to find that out. I'll write that as a little note to see, was it 5 months? That might give us some more clues. But dear brethren, what I can say is these events happen after the 144,000 were sealed and the great multitude here were sealed. A great multitude, as it says in verse 14 of chapter 7, and I said unto him, verse 13, and one of the elders and angels saying unto me, what are these, or who are these arrayed in white robes, and when do they come? Whence? And I said, this is John, sir, thou knowest. And he said to me, this is the answer. These are they which came out of great tribulation and have washed their robes, made them white in the blood of the Lamb. These are the ones who came through the great tribulation. So that's telling us that these events are happening from the biblical narrative here at the around the time of, that Jerusalem is being destroyed, at the time that all the servants of Elohim were sealed. At that time, they escaped. They were allowed to escape. And then this horrible siege and destruction here began to happen. That's what I think. But we must prove all things. And I'm open to other ideas that those of you who may already know the answer, I'm open. But that's what I'm seeing here as I'm reading. So thank you for listening, and we'll continue next Sabbath. Thank you.